We're back, and a lot like, say, Coke or Pepsi, our distinctive flavor is Cherry Francona, with a side order of Bullets and Bills, and let's not forget another. How about Blackberry? Although I guess there's a lot of folks who are pretty upset they can't get enough of it. So welcome aboard. I'm Bill Hayes with Don Landry, and this is The Gist of It.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
You can't tell, but we're at Don's today. And the reason being that we're having some issues at my house. The issues, of course, have been ongoing for almost a month.
Sorry to hear that. Is it with your wife? Is
oh,
it,
no, it's your the flood. The Great Flood of 11, we're calling
issues.
It. Yeah, right. And so today they're tearing down the basement, and it tends to make a little noise, so here we are at your place.
Yeah, you don't think people can tell the difference? You don't think they can hear the opulence through these microphones? I mean, you feel it, don't you?
Oh, you're kidding? Can I move in?
a little bit of a flood in your basement, and it seems like they basically have to dig down to the mantle, the Earth's core, to fix it.
It's unbelievable.
Why is that? I would have thought they would have just dried it, steam cleaned it, and see you later.
Don't you wish? I'm telling you, this is a make work project for a whole lot of people. You want to know why insurance costs are so high?
Yeah.
Have a flood. You'll figure it out.
I thought it was just because the insurance companies were, you know, organized piracy. You're saying that there might be some legitimate cause for. Okay, I'll rethink that. I can rethink that. Well, anyway, glad to have you here. Glad to be here. Ready to go. Lots to talk about. We can't get to all of it, but we can give you the gist of it.
Bombs away, boys. Bombs away.
I sometimes have felt like I'm the only person in the world who doesn't have a BlackBerry. Never have I been so sure of it as I have been this past week. With all the perceived or real problems Research in Motion has had lately, they didn't need this.
Oh, no.
The great Blackout Berry of 2011. Now I really do see just how on the fringes I am. Without one of these things. I mean, I merely have an old-fashioned cell phone. I was phoning and texting to great abandon, not a problem. But I was a young in Dundas yesterday. I swear to God, I saw 30 or 40 people lying on the sidewalk in the rain, curled up in the fetal position, sucking their thumbs. And I knew, BlackBerry clients. The people I've bumped into who are helpless, or so they think, and outraged, too. Honestly, based on many of the comments I've seen on Twitter attached to stories on some of the newspaper sites, you'd have thought RIM was stealing sunlight or oxygen from them, maybe overturning some of a person's inalienable rights, of which the ability to send email from the palm of your hand is not one. Calm down, people. It's not great. I know. You like to have your stuff working all the time. No exceptions. Without fail. It is a great, great hardship when you can't ping your friends about the latest tweet from Rihanna or send a photo of you and your buddies planking at Oktoberfest. I do know there are some business ramifications here. I do realize that. But I'm assuming you've got all your contacts, email addresses, phone numbers, and the like on your laptop or desktop. You do, don't you? If you don't, then you've learned a great lesson from the great instant messaging drought of '11. Always have a backup plan. Or should I say, always have a backup data plan.
So I went to a movie over the weekend, Thanksgiving weekend. You have a little bit of time on your hands, families together. Off we went. I hadn't been for a while. Went to see Killer Elite. It wasn't my first choice, but with Jason Statham, Clive Owen, and Robert De Niro, it wasn't a bad second choice. Supposedly, too, based on a true story written by Sir Ranulph Fiennes. The book is called The Featherman. Now, I won't bore you with the details. I enjoyed the movie. I will say it was interesting enough that I wanted to read the book. So, I went to find it, and there's the rub. Believe it or not, it's not in print. Now, I'm a little put out, but Sir Ranulph Fiennes, he's downright pissed.
This is The Gist of It.
Well, yeah, I would suggest that if this movie surges the way it's supposed to with people like Statham and De Niro in it, then maybe the book goes back into print and a little more money is made.
One would think.
It should be all right, but it's not a movie that I'm just not a big Statham fan. And to tell you the truth, De Niro has started to disappoint me a little bit. Am I wrong about that? Is that sacrilegious? It's De Niro, and I have great respect, or had, but I think he's kind of becoming a bit of a one-trick pony. Actually, it's a two-trick pony. It's the tough guy. Or it's the way over the top, wacky, I can't believe De Niro's doing that. I'm supposed to laugh at it just because he's a tough guy and he's trying to like be the funny in-laws and mugging stuff. Every time I see him on Saturday Night Live, it's like, oh, look at De Niro in a dress. That's it. What are you, Milton Berle? Or are you Raging Bull? I mean, come on. Raging Berle, I guess. Could be. So I don't know how you feel about that. I don't want to dump on De Niro too much. That's ridiculous.
But De Niro's an icon.
That's what I mean.
I mean, he's considered one of the great actors of all time. I would agree with you that certainly he plays that tough role better than almost anybody. And he's there's something to him that I guess sometimes works against type because you so know him as the tough guy. Yeah. When he plays anything else, it's supposed to work. I agree with you. It doesn't work as well as it could.
Another guy, Pacino, who's become just kind of a caricature. He's doing the same thing over and over. Yeah. One of the great actors of my lifetime.
I would dispute that. I think De Niro is. Pacino. Yeah. Pacino's like, he's always over the top, as far as I'm concerned. The only exception being Godfather. He was great in those two movies.
Yeah.
Even the third one.
Yeah. But, well, you get past your best before date, everybody does. And sometimes you rebound and you come back and you become something different. And, John Lithgow is the kind of a guy who I've always respected because of that. He can do serious stuff. Then he goes and does an oddball comedy for a few years on TV. And then he comes back and plays a devious, creepy serial killer on Dexter and just goes back.
Fabulous at it. You're right. And a guy with a tremendous amount of range.
So what I want more, I want more of that from De Niro and Pacino.
There's also something to be said for doing one thing well. And you said something sacrilegious, which was Jason Statham. You know, how you could possibly question what he does.
Wait a sec.
I'm a big fan.
So the De Niro thing you're okay with. But what the sacrilege is me questioning the canon and work of Jason Statham.
Genius, pure genius. Look, I'm not going to suggest for a moment he's a great actor. What I will suggest, as a matter of fact, emphatically suggest, is that he has found exactly what he was meant to do.
Yeah.
And he does it. I think he's better than all. He's Sly Stallone. He's Jean-Claude Van Damme. This generation's that.
I know. That's part of the reason I find it so pedestrian and boring, done a million times over.
But he does it well.
It hasn't been done as well as it was by Eastwood. I think since the Dirty Harry days, I don't think you can find somebody who matches up to that kind of outside the bounds superhero, I'm going to get justice.
Eastwood, to me, though, is exactly the same sort
Bronson,
of thing.
Charlie Bronson, that's it. Class is out.
Eastwood's the same character in every movie he does. That's all. Every time I see Clint Eastwood, I go, that's Clint Eastwood. I don't go, that's Dirty Harry. I go, that's Clint Eastwood. Tell me one movie that he did anything that was out of his realm.
Bill,
there isn't one.
You know what? I know we're not standing in front of my house, but I'm going to say it to you anyway. Get off my lawn.
All of us were really looking forward to that first Coach's Corner because, sadly, there was a lot of stuff that went on in the NHL or in the hockey world over the summer, stuff we referred to. Three deaths, all of tough guys, and all different circumstances. And it was, I think, something we all wanted to see was Don Cherry's reaction to it. It wasn't good. I think the man has lost it, and I think one of the things that we in the media have really missed the ball on is we all sit there and look at Cherry and go, you know what? He's an entertainer. He can't take himself too seriously. The problem is people do take him seriously.
Who? Nobody takes him seriously. I don't know anyone who takes. You can't have it both ways. He's either incoherent and he's a buffoon or people are taking him seriously. You cannot have both sides of the ledger on this one. Pick one.
No.
Because, you know,
I think you can.
Look, who is he affecting? You know, one. He's not going to affect you or me or people who want the NHL to progress. He's never going to convince us. He's not. So don't worry about that. And then the people who are firmly in his camp, we're never going to convince them. So don't worry about that. So what are we left with? The malleable middle. Do you honestly believe that those people who can be swayed one way or the other are going to be swayed by Don Cherry and his fist to the table rhetoric? It's not going to happen that way. He's not dangerous at all.
I disagree. As a matter of fact, I would go so far as to say that one of the reasons that the game got as far out of hand was Don Cherry. One of the things that's been brought up in this whole discussion is his Rock'em Sock'em. I think it's up to 21 of them now.
Right.
In my house, for the longest time, it was a Christmas tradition. You get it, put it on, watch it all the time. Hey, wasn't that great? And what that ended up being was to an awful lot of people anyway, a roadmap as to how to play the game. Oh, you got to be tough. You got to be this. You got to be that. It is a tough game. We get all of that, but it's changed. It's changed an awful lot. But
so
you
had Rock'em Sock'em Hot. Well, so what? Not everyone has to change. The guy's, what is he? How old is he now?
75.
Just let him go not so gently into that good night. Of course, he's not going to change. He doesn't need to change. We don't need to change a short little intermission bit on Hockey Night in Canada to feel better about ourselves. And here's the other thing that I think you're missing about Don Cherry, and many people are. You should be thankful for him.
How's that?
Because he is helping to forward the conversation on what hockey is, has been, and should be. Look at the reaction to what he has said. He's a catalyst. We have seen change in hockey move at a glacial speed. What we need is for it to move just a little bit faster than that if we can. Look at the reaction to Don Cherry's diatribe on Hockey Night in Canada. The usual suspects have come out and talked about him, but then the ancillary topics, which happen to be blows to the head, fighting in the game, where is it going?
I get all of that, contact. For sure.
But you went beyond that to a greater conversation amongst people who had nothing to do with sports radio or sports writing, sports television. Every time Don Cherry does this big push, there is a bigger push back, which moves the peanut further along.
Boy, I wish that were true. That. I don't see that that's necessarily the case. I do think, though, this time...
Wait, how is that not the case? Are you going to deny that there's been this great pushback?
This time there has, but there hasn't been in the past.
Oh, this is the first time we've had Don Cherry
like
in
this,
hot water.
Not like this. Don't you think this is the biggest one yet? To me, this one was so over the pale. This might be the one that pushes him out the door.
Just proves my point. It just does. So what? The bigger the tsunami, the better when it comes to this. Because of the reaction to it. You have got to have, we've talked about movies here. In movies, you got to have the bad guy. In pro wrestling, you got to have the bad guy. Mm-hmm. You've got to have guys in dark hats and white hats. And the dark hat guy here is Don Cherry. And he, consolidates the anti-fighting, anti-headshot, anti-knuckle-dragging, blood and guts hockey lobby. And gets it motivated and gets it mobilized. And that's what we're seeing right now. And so, if you're so upset with what Don Cherry says, think about it from that angle. And thank the Lord above that he's there on a Saturday night to give you the enemy you can focus on.
If I believed for a moment that that's how people in general viewed him, I'd be in your corner. I tend to think that people actually look at him and go... Right on, Don. Everything like that there.
But
again, I believe that.
Those people are already there. You're not. This is like an argument between a hardened conservative and a hardened liberal. You're not going to move them together. It's the people in between whose hearts and minds you need to win. Don Cherry, do you think that reasonable people who want to listen to both sides of an issue, who want to mull that over before they can come to their conclusion, are going to be swayed by anybody who does the kind of act that Don Cherry does? Do they want to be pushed around? Do they want to be bullied into it? Can they be bullied into it? No. They want the thoughtful argument. They want good points made. They want to draw their conclusion based on that. No one's going to cower and be afraid to speak out because Don Cherry might yell at them. In fact, we've seen quite the opposite this past week. So there's another issue involved here when it comes to Don Cherry too, and that is, should the CBC allow him? I get very uncomfortable with talk like that. And in fact, sometimes I get angry about that. Allow him to... What is he saying? That it doesn't come close to meeting the bar when it comes to hate speech, discrimination, and racism. Particularly this last diatribe. It just doesn't. This question about whether he should be allowed to have a show and be on there is one that I don't really care to entertain for too long. I think you can vote with your clicker.
Of course you can. Well, there's another argument with that, Don, and that is the CBC is always considered to be, by everybody, this left-wing conspiracy. Well, you can't say that about Don Cherry, and you can't say it about Kevin O'Leary.
Right.
So... throw that out. And I think one of the things that does kind of help the CBC's argument is that they are allowing that. And, you know, my point with whether this show will eventually end up being replaced has nothing to do with what the CBC thinks or how they believe or who they're allowing to speak. Right. It has everything to do with the dollar. If it becomes an issue that one of the sponsors for Coach's Corner decides, you know what, we're backing out because we can no longer be associated with whatever Don Cherry's talking about, that's the moment that show will be, he'll be pulled from Hockey Night in Canada. Not until then, because his numbers are through the roof.
Well, and he shouldn't be pulled, not just because of the numbers being through the roof, but he shouldn't be pulled because there are people who disagree with what he says. I mean, he should be pulled if he says things and continually says things that are completely and utterly unacceptable. Now, the one thing that he might have done that was unacceptable in this first episode of Coach's Corner, he may have slandered some people, and that's for the law firms to take care of and the lawyers and mediators to talk about it. And I doubt it'll ever see the light of day.
Oh, I disagree
court
on that.
Case. I think they'll settle it out of court. But they can deal with that part of it. So he likes hits to the head. Okay. You don't like it. I don't like it. Well, too bad. That doesn't come nearly close to being reprehensible enough for me to say that shouldn't be allowed.
Let me throw something else at you, too. Maybe the real culprit in all of this isn't Don Cherry at all. Maybe it's Ron McLean. Maybe Ron McLean, instead of being his stooge, which for the most part he is, maybe Ron McLean should be sitting there and actually getting in his face and going, you know what, I'm not going to take your bullying anymore. You're wrong, and here's why you're wrong.
Well,
except McLean doesn't believe that.
I don't think he does either.
No, but maybe someone like that should be there.
And the format of the show has been, you know, that Don Cherry says what he wants, and Ron McLean mostly doesn't say too much about it, but he ushers it through and meets the deadline, you know, when it's time to sign off, and that's basically it, and moves him along. That's his job. You can call it being a stooge if you want, but I think it's just that it's a very well-defined job of being the usher for the segment.
He and, does it well.
It's not point, counterpoint.
But it, should it be? That's the question.
Yeah, it could. They've done it on occasion. It hasn't happened an awful lot, and I don't mind that. I like a good conversation with opposing points of view, and as I've said before, if there is a real integrity to the disagreement and the anger and the raised voices, then I'm okay with that. But just for the sake of it being an argument, or just for the sake of me feeling good because somebody is sitting beside him and taking my point of view, I don't really need that.
Well, I think for the sake of actually having a lucid discussion, something where Don can give his point on something. Listen, he's right about certain things. I think he's bang on about no-touch icing. He's bang on about the equipment and the plastic and so on and so forth. He's right about a lot of things. There's some things, though, that, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to go, you know what, Don, I think you're wrong here. And just to get, I think for one thing, he would react in a way that might be a little more interesting.
I don't think so. I don't think you can get more interesting, and I think it goes off the rails anyway. You mentioned Kevin O'Leary from Dragon's Den, and mm-hmm. He does, of course, business commentary on CBC. And I think the chemistry that he has with his co-host, Amanda Lang, is he's accepting of her chiming in and saying, you're wrong about this. He'll often not say anything. That's the plan of that program, is that he'll say something outrageous. She'll be the yang to the yin, and he's okay with that. Don Cherry wouldn't be okay with that. It would very quickly, and I think we found that out years ago, quickly go off the rails. And so Ron he's not a victim, but I mean, his role in that show, I believe, is subject to the characteristics of the guy beside him, and that's it. I mean, look, for years I dueled with Pat Marsden.
You did,
but again, that was because Pat was mostly accepting of that. He got that that's the way that was going to be. There were times when he clearly did not want to hear from me,
mm-hmm.
and got very upset. That is what Don Cherry will do, almost.
Oh, he's
always
done it many times, for sure.
You stand up against
him. Yeah, absolutely.
It'll get it off the rails, and you're not going to have the same kind of show as you would. So I get pissed off at people who say, Ron McLean should be doing this. Ron McLean should be doing this. The show should be more about this. There are plenty of shows out there where people are having those conversations. Or worse, it's becoming the drudgery and the dullness of, well, they're at 93% of the cap, and you can't play
third-line
left winger and pay him that amount of money. I don't need more of that. I want this kind of entertainment. And if you don't like it and you don't like Don Cherry, guess what? It's 7 or 8 minutes out of your week. Okay? You can ignore it completely.
It's Phil Hayes and Don Landry, and you're getting the gist of it.
There were, a couple of interesting collapses in the baseball world. Let's face it, this year there were very few pennant races for most of the season. Actually, it was pretty much a given as to who was going to be in the American League. The wild card team was going to be the Boston Red Sox, and that was pretty much the case all year. They were pretty close to the Yankees. Atlanta was going to be the wild card team in the National League, and both of them ended up collapsing in the final month. Now, no one's come out yet and explained what the problem was in Atlanta, and probably it's because ownership isn't all that upset with it at this point. But that's not the case with Boston. There was an article in the Boston Globe a couple days ago, and it suggested that Terry Francona, the fired manager, was distracted. He had some problems with some painkillers. He was going through a separation. He had other issues that he was concerned about. Meanwhile, some players, mostly three starting pitchers, would be spending time in the clubhouse during games, drinking beer, eating fried chicken, and playing video games, and that basically there was a lack of discipline, and this is the whole reason.
So that's what I do during baseball.
Well, yeah, but you're not getting millions of dollars to pitch from time to time.
No.
It's a small thing, but...
Well, here's the only thing I care about with this story is it true? You know, and if it is true, then, you know, regardless of who's been leaking these details, ownership knew about it, had to know about it. How could you not know about it? And you should have done something about it. Not post-mortem, but as it was happening. If your manager is on painkillers and distracted and your players have tuned him out and you've still got a bit of a lead, but it's dwindling and you're just pissing it away, guess what? You need to do something to right that ship. And they didn't do it. But beyond that, I don't care that the Boston Globe ran it with unnamed sources. Unnamed sources are very valuable. If they're good sources, I still have to trust, by and large, that good journalists are going to go with stories with unnamed sources that are good sources. And not just guys who, you know, walked through the dressing room with
The Boston Globe is a reputable paper, of course. I agree with you.
If it's proven otherwise, then I go, oh, well, shame on that reporter. Well, but I will still stick to the notion that unnamed sources are and can be exceptionally important and linchpins to important stories. You don't have to go any further than Watergate to prove that.
On occasion, you have to have it. I couldn't agree with you more on that. But I think there's also a lot more to this story because it's not necessarily about anything but justifying what they did afterwards, which was to get rid of the manager and see the general manager walk to a new job. I would dispute, though, that while all this was going on, they knew and there was something they could do because, look, the Red Sox lost on the last day of the season. They were in it right till the end. Yes, they had a lead and they blew it. It happens. You know what? They play baseball.
Not do something if you know that this is all happening behind the scenes? I mean,
I think what you do
like
is
you're driving towards a cliff. And you know what? But we're still not there, so maybe things are going to be okay. But the guy at the wheel is hopped up on painkillers and is watching a girl in a miniskirt on the side of the road. You do something.
I don't believe that there was a reason for that at the time. I don't believe that they knew about any of that stuff or they thought it was a big issue. And I'll tell you what, if they'd have won, it wouldn't have been an issue. That's another part of this. The fact is you had three starting pitchers in the clubhouse doing whatever they do on their days off.
And the manager's going to know that, and the general manager's going to know that, and ownership is going to know that, and along the line somewhere, somebody does something about that. It's on baseball standards or in baseball standards, reprehensible to the Red Sox fan that nothing was done about that.
I tend to look upon this.
Do you honestly believe, Bill, that after the collapse was complete, Theo Epstein went into the dressing room and said, guys, listen, I don't know what happened. I'm really sorry. And somebody put up their hand. Oh, here's something maybe you should know. And then gave them all these details. No.
No, I don't think that they knew about a lot of that stuff. I think something along those lines did in fact
happen.
Guys
were doing it in the clubhouse.
So what? But that's kept quiet. Look, it's a team. No one's
going
to go.
The manager would know what's going on.
Quite possibly. Although, how often does the manager go into the clubhouse during a game? He doesn't. Someone has to tell him. I think it's...
Wow, you are forgiving. Wow.
Well, look.
If you seriously believe that nobody could have known about this as it was happening.
I don't think ownership would have known. How would ownership know?
Hello, Theo. What's going on with our team?
I don't know.
Theo, I don't know. Terry, what's going on with our team?
I don't know.
All right.
I don't think Theo's ever in the clubhouse. I mean, I don't think that's the way these guys work.
Well, you know what? Then there's another reason for you to be gone. Good, go to the Cubs then if I'm Red Sox ownership.
I don't know.
If you don't have your finger on the pulse of your team, Terry Francona, you got to go. And if you don't have your finger on the pulse of Terry Francona, Theo Epstein, good. Go. Goodbye. Thank you for the memories and a couple of World Series titles.
I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's that simple.
From the inside.
I think there's a team element to a lot of this stuff. It's an us against them thing, and not necessarily is the general manager part of the us.
I mentioned BlackBerry and people being all out of sorts because that thing went down. And they really, truly were.
Sure.
It's as though they couldn't function. How much more can we take as human beings, Bill? How much more immediacy happening now in the know? Gotta have it. Somebody said to me last week, hey, thank goodness for Twitter. And I went, well, why? Well, because, you know, I knew about Steve Jobs right away. Okay. What if you had found out about Steve Jobs 5 minutes after it went out on Twitter? What about if you found about it the next day?
Mm-hmm.
How would that change your life? Well, it's just you get it right away. But that's the right. It's just you can, you do, you get. It just seems to me that there's this desire, or I don't even know if it's a desire anymore. See, I'm becoming confused. It's a need to be immediate. But what? Where does it come from?
Well, really, the question is why? And I think the answer to that is pretty simple. Because you can. You know, there's the old joke about why does a dog... Because he can.
Yeah.
You know, but that's really the answer. Because you don't need it. You don't need any of this information immediately. And what does it get you? Nothing. But it gives you some information. It's useless.
I know, but is it more than this? Is it dangerous to people? Is it changing ours? It has to be changing. Everything changes, you know, the psyche of a human being as you develop new things. I mean,
what is changing is expectations.
Horseback riding changed. The fire changed the psyche of human beings.
True.
The first automobile.
The
like
iPod.
That. The birth control pill.
Ah, that was a biggie. I was a fan of that.
So it's got to be doing something.
Well, it's expectations, and it's a big part of the way we live now. We expect all of this stuff. Go back to the BlackBerry thing. What's the problem with it? Well, I expected an email.
Yeah.
What? Who cares?
I know.
You know, 15 years ago, you got the email when you got home. Very simple. You got near a computer. I'll check my emails. Now, I got to have it now.
The people have now adjusted to life on the fly, and it's got to happen on the fly. And that's why I, again, ask the question, when is it going to be too much? Are we headed for a disaster of social and epic proportions where people are just at some point going to become much too overwhelmed with what is coming at them and what they are responsible for sending out?
I think
and
at some
do
point-
they start just... At some point in the near future, aren't we going to be faced with a downtown core of people just walking around going, it's a lovely day.
No, I think it's more likely it'll be, like you said, in fetal position. Because it's an overload that's not necessary.
There's got to be value added. This is the one thing that I try to do with my tweets. I'm not always successful. Who is always going to be successful? But is value add with either an opinion or a funny line, or something that's thoughtful, or a link to something that's mm-hmm. more substantial. But please, people, stop cluttering Twitter with 7:43 left in the second period, 1-0 Leafs.
Don't need to know.
I don't need it.
No.
I don't need to know what color the jerseys are but in scrimmage that morning either, okay? That's not a valuable tweet.
But isn't that a function of what people are being told to do? If you're a reporter, as an example, you're a reporter and you're at a Leaf game, and you have all these other things you have to take care of. You've got to watch the action. You've got to get yourself your report, whether it be a radio, television, newspaper report, whatever. You have to prepare it. As the game is going on, the story is taking shape in your head. You're watching this. And then on top of that, you've got a tweet. Why? What for? There's no real reason, except someone above you has decided, you know what? Get them to tweet. There's no reason.
I know. That it is because we can. So
we're all dogs.
We've got, yes, we've got some catching up to do. What is this all about? Where is it useful? How is it useful? When is it not? How do I not become, or how do I stop being a slave to what is possible in doing things just for the sake of the ability to do them and do them immediately? Look, it's time to, I don't know.
Lighten up? How about unplug?
Turn off. Tune out.
I've heard that. Out.
I think that's not exactly right, is it?
It's close enough for me.
It was just after we recorded last week's podcast that we got the news that Steve Jobs had passed away. I was amazed with the outpouring of affection towards the man. Were you not?
Incredibly. And the thing was, it was massive and immediate.
Yeah, it was.
Everywhere you went.
He would have liked that part.
He would have
liked that part. It was akin to the Jack Layton response here, or years ago, Princess Diana. But then, of course, you had the offshoots. Did you know that turtleneck sales spiked? Like, infinite, huge, through the roof.
It's funny. I get mocked for my turtlenecks all the time.
You get mocked for a lot of things. And by the way, I did get that.
Okay.
I did get that.
Okay.
And there were many jokes about Steve Jobs passing away too. Some of them may be tasteless. I came up with one that I did not tweet. I'd like to use it here, and I hope you'll take it in the spirit in which it is meant, which is just a
complimentary
line and complimentary to the man. But is there any doubt in your mind that as soon as he passed away, Steve Jobs was immediately reincarnated as a smaller, more powerful version of himself?
And that's The Gist of It for another week. The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.